Let's do this. The Cult of Hockey podcast by the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal, and I'm here tonight with Bruce McCurdy. Welcome, Bruce.
Hey, David.
Oh, pretty terrible night. It's the kind of night that makes you want to stop watching hockey forever.
Sorry. Very discouraging. Very discouraging.
Just an absolute must-win game. A game they should win game against a team that's, you know, back-to-back games on a 7-game losing streak, full of just tons of injuries.
And missing seven regulars. Apparently they had 10 or 11 guys who have fewer than 40 games played in the NHL.
And then the way the Oilers lost that game was just absolutely pathetic, because it was mental error after mental error by players who are veteran players who it's just completely unacceptable. And it's the kind of thing, if it continues with them, like, they can't stay. Now, that said, it's players who usually who haven't been playing great this year, but haven't been this bad. This is probably the worst game of the year for a few of them. Adam Larson being at the top of that list, just an absolutely rancid performance by Adam Larson that he should be ashamed of. And, and how do you lose to an AHL level team, Bruce? Your top defenseman play like a bunch of beer leaguers.
And your goalie plays like a rent-a-goalie that no one wants.
Yeah. So this is our too good thing, too bad thing. Numbers podcast. We could probably have lots of bad things, but I'll start with my good thing. I thought that one guy who looked like he had some jump and showed up and was hustling and hitting and trying to make plays with Zach Cassian. I liked his game. He's been really strong since Ken Hitchcock took over, and it was another strong game from him. He was one of the few Oilers forwards that didn't have me again wondering, why don't they have an airlift from Bakersfield? Because when you get down in games like this, Bruce, you know, Toby Reeder and Milan Lucic and Kyle Brodziak, they're not going to score. It's just not going to happen. And I don't know why the Oilers haven't called up more talent from Bakersfield long ago, frankly. I just don't think. I think they had a slight chance of making the playoffs this year. And I think and Caleb Jones should be on this team. And I know, well, people say, well, you don't want to wreck what's going on in Bakersfield, but that's not what this is about. And they say, don't want to rush players. Well, we're not talking about 18 and 19 year old first draft picks. We're talking about Marody, who's the same age as McDavid. We're talking about Caleb Jones now in his second year in the AHL. And we're talking about Benson, who's now had more 50 some games in the AHL. So anyway, I just wanted to get off that off my chest as well. One more time. Because I need to get it off my chest at least once every podcast, as you know.
Yeah. Well, my good thing, I guess I'm going to go with Connor McDavid with his two assists getting 200 points on the season. And that's a nice milestone in any NHL season. 3 years in a row for the 22-year-old. They did show a nice graphic during the game where they said he was one behind Wayne Gretzky, and I think Mario Lemieux had 400-point seasons before age 23. But they actually blew that graphic because Wayne Gretzky, in his fifth season in which he turned 23, already was way over 100 points before his birthday. So he actually had a season where, you know, a part season with more than 100 points. But they just look at the whole season when they shortcut those things. Whereas I remember those seasons. That was, anyway.
You do remember them.
Anyway, McDavid got two assists. There was things about his game I wasn't thrilled with. He really was struggling to get through. Andy Green seemed to have him wrapped up. Like, his shots, his passes weren't seeming to fool anybody. And his scoring touch, you know, I don't know where it's gone. He's got 5 goals now in his last 19 games. I mean, that's a long stretch of the season. And, you know, that's like a 22-goal pace or whatever. And that's just way, way below what you'd expect for this player. I'm just not quite sure where the shooting eye, I mean, he sure seems to ring the post about once a game. But just beating goalies with shots, he's reluctant to let fly from good shooting positions. And for whatever reason, they're just...
He hasn't been at his best for about a month, Bruce, since since he got, what was that, since his suspension, I think, actually. He came back in that Toronto game, and everyone was expecting a big game. It didn't happen. There's another Toronto game, nothing. There's just been a lot of games where you're expecting more from him. And of course, the expectations are through the roof with McDavid.
Yeah. As they should be, really. As they should.
That's right. And for himself, I'm sure he has himself in the same position. But no, he hasn't. He hasn't been the best player on the Oilers since that suspension. Draisaitl has been in this time period. And Draisaitl, I thought, was again pretty strong.
Yeah, he had a good game. His scoring streak came to an end after 14 games.
Yeah,
He was like third assist on two different goals and a little bit snake bit, hit the post. And I thought played a pretty strong two-way game, one of the few on the Oilers in this game.
Okay, what's your bad thing?
Rock, paper, scissors. I got the net mining. You got the defense? Okay, the net mining. Brutal. Just brutal. Yeah. Koskinen, I almost tweeted like 10 minutes into the first period that everything I've seen out of Mikko Koskinen to this point has given me zero confidence.
Yeah, he looked off, didn't he?
He just was shaky. Like he mishandled the puck really bad. Like he gave one guy a wide open net. He fumbled another puck into the trapezoid. He was credited with three giveaways, the worst on the team, the goalie. And that's just the puck handling. None of those cost him. What did cost him was him getting beat by outside shots time and again. I mean, Quenneville there, the goal he scored that finally drove him out of the net. What was that, a grade C chance probably? I mean, he was over by the sideboards. And somehow, I mean, it was a good shot and all, but you can't be getting beat from there. And he was beat by another long shot. The first goal, I mean, it was kind of a grade A chance, but the guy came in, he got his blocker on it, and he bounced it up and over himself, and he hit it with his back and into the net. Like, that was a brutal goal.
Yeah, he faced five grade A shots, and he let in four goals.
Wow.
So, come on. Like,
this is not that, no,
and
no,
you're right, like, even though grade A shots, like, the first one he should have probably was a weird one.
He got his blocker on it, and he just waffled it right over his own shoulder and into the net.
Yeah, he just didn't look right.
And then Stolarz came in, and of course he lets one in from about 45 or 50 feet, and then the game's over.
Yeah, he wasn't any better. No, it was terrible goaltending. But really, I think the main culprits tonight were the defensemen. In particular, a couple mental errors by Darnell Nurse and Adam Larson in the first period. Got the team. This game was wide open for the Oilers to win. They came out storming this team. They got up. The New Jersey got that early goal. So that was Nurse. He's on the power play, and he fails to shoot it in. Fair enough. You fail to shoot it in. Sometimes someone's going to get a stick in there. But what does he do? Instead of being aware of the situation,
just wanders
it in slowly, follows it in like mesmerized and follows it in, and then it's a two-on-one. Nice work, Darnell Nurse. Like, wake up.
Pay attention, yeah.
Wake up.
That was bad.
You're a veteran hockey player. You can't do that anymore. So then that's 1-0. And then the Oilers come back and they're storming it. I mean, they had seven scoring chances to two scoring chances.
The one power play was devastating.
Yeah, they just were fantastic. The Oilers are great in the first period. But then the Oilers, so then it's late in the first period. It's almost out of the zone and there's a kind of a point play. And Adam Larson is just totally, what is he doing? He leaves the guy wide open in front of his net with 15 seconds left in the period, and he scores. I mean, that was just heartbreaking. And this is why I'm saying Larson should be ashamed. Come on. What does every defenseman hear all the time, especially when they're killing a penalty? Their head whole life is a defenseman, and he is a professional. He's earning $4 million a year, and he leaves that guy open in front of the net like that.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? If it was just this, Bruce, he's not been sharp mentally many games this year. And I don't know.
Same thing happened in the second period when a guy got in behind him and he had two great chances, and then Klefbom wound up taking a penalty, and then they wound up scoring on the power play.
So on that one.
And that was Larson's negligence, really.
And Nugent Hopkins. So Larson had an eye on the guy in the high slot, right? And he's kind of moving out there. And then he's moving out there. And then Nuge starts moving to the same player. They both start moving, almost bumping into each other to cover the guy in the high slot. Meanwhile, There's a guy in the low slot that slips in behind them. So terrible communication. It was as much on Nugent Hopkins, that one, as it was on Larson, but it was on definitely on both of them. And there's another, the penalty, and then they score on the subsequent power play. And then on the when Stolarz goes in the net, Larson, again, loses a battle at the center ice and is slow coming back. And that's the guy who puts it in the net from the high slot. Again, Larson's man.
Yeah, he was behind that guy too, you're right.
Well,
I thought that pairing, frankly, I didn't think Klefbom was a whole lot better. They had a brutal game.
I thought he should have benched Larson, Bruce.
Klefbom and Nurse was, you know, like their top defenders just didn't come through with a very good game at all, and neither, of course, did their netminder. And that's how you give up 6 goals to a team missing all their best scorers.
After that play at the end of the first period, they should have benched him for the first 2 or 3 minutes, one shift at least to start the second, just to reinforce, like, wake up. Before we're putting on your ice, we're just going to give you a little public wake-up call, and you'll be better after that, I'm sure. But it didn't happen. And I understand why that doesn't happen.
Minor hockey, we used to do that kind of stuff all the time, but I'm not sure at the pro level. They really pick their spots, the coaches, with the benchings over the course of a long season. But
it's really appropriate.
Suffice to say, Larson was not sharp at all tonight, and he had
minor hockey. It's not like you wouldn't even do like anymore. You wouldn't do that because it's not appropriate. Like it's supposed to be fun for like it's supposed to be fun. It's not about the winning. One shift. Pro hockey is about the winning. Yeah. It really is. And. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. What is your number?
I got for a number 17. That is the number of regulation losses by Edmonton Oilers on their home ice in Rogers Place, their beautiful downtown arena that cost $600 million to put on a wonderful show in the Cathedral of Hockey in Edmonton. And too many nights, and this was one of the worst ones, the team has not put on a good show and that's been blown out of the said Cathedral of Hockey. And tonight by a team that was really in the doldrums and just not excusable. That's 17 losses. That ties them with Detroit Red Wings. And who was the other team? Los Angeles Kings and Edmonton Oilers, all worst in the NHL for most losses in their home ice. Like their total inability to make this barn their own. I mean, here they have a 4-game homestand. They're on a nice roll, and they got a 4-game homestand. They hang on to win the first game in regulation, lose the second game, barely scrape out an overtime win in the third game. They get clobbered by a weak sister in the fourth game. They're 2-2-0 on the homestand with one clear victory. And at no point at any game in that homestand did you think, you know, the Oilers are just simply better than the other guys tonight. We're winning this game handily. Not happening. And it just...
Yeah, the margin for error is just too tight because they don't have, like, the narrative heading into the game was, well, the Oilers are winning now because they're together, they're playing for each other, and they've got good spirit. No, come on.
Oh, yeah?
They're winning now because they added Andre Sekera and Oscar Klefbom to the lineup, two guys who can actually make plays and move the puck. They added skill to a lineup sorely lacking in skill. And Sekera has been playing fantastic hockey. And that's why they're a better team all of a sudden. If they want to win more, they need to add more skill. This is like, how about that for a narrative for once before the game? No, it's not Hitchcock's narrative because he's he's in a position where he could add some skill, but no, he wants to go with these other players who he thinks are going to win him hockey games. Well, it's not going to happen. The Oilers are not going to start winning until they have a more skilled, faster and more skilled hockey team. And very frustrating.
What's your number, David?
My number is a letter. It's E chance. You already raised. I mean, we don't see that very often, Bruce, a C chance on an empty net goal. We see C chances go in. These
empty net goals,
A scoring chances from the inner slot. They're not B chances from kind of the outer slot. This is a C chance from there was no one blocking his view. There was no deflection. It was a hard shot from the boards.
Yeah.
He missed it.
Yeah, like he was way out at the far hash marks near the boards, like a good 10 feet beyond the dot where you would normally be your threshold for a B chance even. 10 feet out from there, blown away with a good hard slap shot, no mistake. But this 6'7" goalie, I mean, he should be filling the net from that angle. There should be nothing.
When you're calling players up from Bakersfield, you can also include Shane Starrett on the list. Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
Let's see him for 5 games. Let's see how he can do for 5 games.
Koskinen's been fine until.
Yeah, he has.
But tonight he let down the side. There's no two ways about it. You could see him steaming on the bench, and he was pretty cheesed up with himself.
Yeah, sorry, Bruce. It was actually one of the most encouraging moments of the game. I felt sorry for him, that he was so upset. Good for him. He was like that. He should have been, and he was, and and good for him.
It was an appropriate reaction, He wasn't like pointing fingers and doing the old Henrik Lundqvist thing or Patrick Waugh thing of, you know, when one goes in, it's anybody else's fault but his, you know. And so I'd like to think that he was owning it, and I bet you he does own it in the post-game interviews. Nothing against Koskinen particularly, but tonight he was bad. You know, and we say that about too many players tonight. Too many guys just didn't play their A or B game. We saw the C game from too many of the Oilers' stalwart, especially defensive players.
Matt Benning and Sekera brought his A game.
Sekera by far the best pairing.
He Sekera brought his B game. Cassian brought his A or B game. Matt Benning is really doing a nice job of getting pucks on net fast, and.
Well, tonight, Matt Benning took 5 shots toward goal, and all of them were on goal. Oscar Klefbom took 9 shots toward goal, and 7 of them were blocked. And Darnell Nurse took 7 shots toward goal, and none of them were on goal. Yeah, they missed the net or got them blocked all 7 times.
Yeah, the Oilers are going to have a tough decision this summer with Matt Benning. And you know, there's still games to be played before they have to make up their mind. And Benning's really making a strong case to keep him. But the problem is the Oilers are going to need to cut salary. They're going to need to get more puck-moving defensemen. They've got to also create some room in Bakersfield. They've got players coming up to Bakersfield. Caleb Jones has got to be on the Oilers next year. They've got to find a space for him. So this means moving out a veteran D. So who are you going to move out? I mean, this is the problem. And obviously, the choice is Chris Russell.
Yeah, he's number one choice.
On but it's they might have to. You know, I think you might find a team that wants him. Of course, he's got a partial no trade clause too, so that makes it more difficult. But hopefully, they can move out Russell and keep Benning at this point. But it's, you know, the season's not over yet. We'll see what happens and see how it all unfolds. All right. Thanks, Bruce.
Now, they got a huge game against Arizona on Saturday night. But, you know, now that they're 6 points in arrears of them and blew their game in hand tonight, you know, they have no choice but to go into Arizona and win. And then they turn around and play in Vegas the very next night. So it's a tall order this weekend, but they just made it tall on themselves. I mean, this was the most winnable game on the rest of the schedule, to be frank. And gone.
Yeah,
and
I've been hopeful. Like, you get your hopes up, but again, I think, as you know, been consistently saying they need to bring in some more attacking players.
You've been very consistent about that, David.
So, all right, thanks, Bruce.
All right, thank you, David. Thanks for listening, everyone.
And in the meantime, and in between times, this has been another edition of the Hockey Podcast.